This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Markets have been choppy, and some analysts say a recession is still on the table. Let's look at that, plus get a technical view on financial markets. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. As mentioned, it's time to take a look at financial markets. Let's bring on Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Jim, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
It's always great to join you, Andy.
Well, and Jim, markets have been choppy as of late. A lot of questions surrounding inflation, Fed policy, and even a potential recession have been swirling. It's been about 6 weeks since our last discussion, and we'll have you take a technical look in a second, but just to kind of kick off the conversation here, let's take a look at the economic and market fundamentals and what we've seen since the last time we spoke. Your thoughts?
Well, we're continuing to see inflation work its way down, which is something that you and I talked about really late last year, that we would see a big decline in the CPI in the first 6 months of this year. In coming months, Andy, especially the headline inflation number, very well may tick up. As we've seen, oil prices have gone since the end of June from $68 a barrel to today hit $86. Gasoline prices nationwide are up about 9%. Well, those things are the two categories that subtracted the most from the CPI when it dropped from 9% down to 3%. So they're going to see a tick up there. The PCE inflation, which is something I think a lot of people may not pay as much of attention to as they should. When Jay Powell gave his Jackson Hole speech, at the end of August, he didn't talk about CPI inflation. He talked about core PCE, personal consumption expenditures. And that is going to continue to come down as well. The ride is going to get a little bumpy. But the bottom line here, Andy, the two things that Powell talked about was seeing inflation come down and labor market tightness easing. And the reports last week from the JOLTS survey, as well as the jobs numbers that came out on Friday, show that things are continuing, labor market tightness is continuing to ease. So those are the two things that are going the Fed's way. But, as we'll talk, I think people don't fully appreciate that the Fed's time frame is more like 3 to 5 years as opposed to, what's going to happen over the next 6 months, which is kind of where Wall Street's head usually is.
And so then when you look at that longer time frame, what are you seeing? On the fundamental side, that is.
Yeah. So, from the Fed's perspective, they want to see inflation come down and then stay down so that at the beginning of the next expansion, inflation doesn't recover quickly and begin to trend higher. That's what happened in the 1970s. So from Powell's perspective, and he actually laid this out last year in Jackson Hole, he said we will need to see GDP growth below its long-term trend for an extended period of time. Well, the long-term trend growth if you will, non-inflationary trend growth is about 2%, maybe a touch below that. So what have we seen since August of 2022? GDP has been above 2% every single quarter, and in the third quarter of this year may approach 3%. So for the Fed's perspective, if they're going to achieve getting inflation down to near their 2% target and then having it stay there for a while, even as the economy rebounds, I think Powell and the other members of the FOMC are going to want to see GDP slow to under 2% for probably two or three quarters. The second thing is labor market tightness. The Fed has a number they come up with, non-accelerating inflation rate. In the last, you know, report, and this is a, you know, this isn't a hard and fast number. They do a bunch of calculations to guesstimate this number, which they say is 4.4%. So the same thing applies, Andy, in terms of the labor market. For there to be enough slack so that at the beginning of the next business expansion, wages don't start ticking higher up right away, I think the Fed would like to see the unemployment rate go above 4%. And at the June meeting, the median projection was that the unemployment rate will get to 4.5% next year. So as we know, it went from 3.5 to 3.8 in August. I think the Fed, in order to feel confident that they can get inflation down and even more confident that it's going to stay down, the unemployment rate is going to have to rise fairly significantly from where it is. And historically, Andy, the only time the unemployment rate's gone up by 0.5% has been during a recession. So to me, those are the benchmarks that Powell has laid out and referenced consistently. And obviously, they're happy with inflation coming down. They're happy that wage growth has eased. But, you know, again, I think longer term, when they look out over the next 3 to 5 years, you know, the checklist is we need to see GDP growth under 2% for an extended period, and we're going to need to see a modest increase in the unemployment rate. Probably that approaches the 4.4% Nehru number that they use.
That kind of is in contrary to team soft landing, it sounds like, a bit.
It really is. And the thing that I find a little incredulous is everyone talks about, oh my God, the Fed has increased the funds rate like more than, you know, any business cycle going back the last 30, 40 years. You know, it's over 500 basis points. And yet, despite that significant increase, Wall Street, you know, thinks that there won't be a recession. And I just find that hard to believe because, again, all this stuff works with lag times. And there were some unique characteristics to, you know, this most recent recovery since the pandemic that have maybe stretched out some of these lead times between where, gee, the yield curve inverted. Well, historically, it's like 19 months before you get a recession. This is going back 60 years. The yield curve has preceded every single recession. So it's, you know, been 100% in terms of being correct. The lag times between when a signal is given and when the economy goes into recession vary pretty significantly. The average is 19 months. And the yield curve inverted in July of last year. So we're, as we get towards the end of this year, you know, that says, wow, you know, that message from that indicator kind of says that we should anticipate a decent amount of slowing between now and the end of the year. We are already seeing it. In the last 3 months, job growth was 150,000 versus 240,000 from March, April, and May. So, you know, my view has been no recession in the first half of this year or last year, but we would start to see signs of slowing in the third quarter that would become more pronounced in the fourth quarter. So, you know, my take is I think we're on the cusp of seeing more slowing in the economy. And the timing is kind of perfect because as you talked in question about, you know, Wall Street, oh, the soft landing, we're not going to have a recession. It's kind of like that is the, you know, what is the consensus at this view time or at this time? You know, late last year, early this year, people were talking about a recession. That was the consensus. And now because one hasn't unfolded, the consensus has become, oh, we don't have to worry about a recession. And I think,
but it's still lingering there. There are crumbs that are still indicating that it's been there. And you made an excellent point that some of the indicators people cited earlier on are way front running in the leading indicator department.
Exactly. And then, you know, last year, you know, people were talking, oh, my God, two quarters in a row. That's a simple definition that more often than not has been right. You get two consecutive quarters of negative GDP, and, you know, that has coincided with a recession. The thing I talked about and wrote about was gross domestic income. It's kind of like the cousin to GDP. And last year, that was positive. It had one negative quarter, but three out of the four were positive. But it has been negative in the late last year and the first two quarters of this year. So that is painting a weaker picture, if you will, of how the economy is performing than GDP. So again, it ties into the idea that more slowing should be expected over the next 3 to 6 months. And, you know, what typically happens, Andy, is things start to slow down. It accelerates. So if and when we see the unemployment rate tick above 4%, we're going to see consumers probably cut back on spending as they become more cautious. The excess savings that consumers built up during the pandemic, you know, from not going out, getting a bunch of money from the government, the San Francisco Fed estimates that that will be gone by the end of September. Now, it won't be gone for everybody. You know, the wealthy will certainly have excess savings, but a higher percentage of people who live kind of paycheck to paycheck are going to have depleted their savings. And the other thing I'll note, you know, there was a lot of reports last week, Andy, but the one that I think might be the most significant is the consumer confidence number that came out from the conference board. It dropped from 88, the expectations dropped from 88 down to 80. Anytime there's been a recession, it's dropped below 80. So we're right on the borderline. The overall number dropped from 114 to 106 for August. That's a big decline in such a short period of time. And I think what's happening is in the year-over-year numbers of inflation, and you and I have talked about this, you know, basically, and I'll use this analogy, and I'm sorry to be long-winded, but I think this will work. Let's say in 2019, a family was spending $300 a week when they went to the grocery store. Now they're spending $400 because a lot of things have gone up in price. But if you look at the 12-month rate of change, for instance, if that $400 that they're spending remained unchanged for 12 months, it would show inflation at 0%. In the meantime, we know since the end of 2019, wages are up 18% on average. So if somebody was spending $300, now they're spending $400, and their wage increases covered about $54 of that $100 increase. That means even though inflation would have theoretically dropped to near 0%, they're still shy $46 of what they're spending out of other income. And I think that is one of the things that's hitting a lot of consumers, is as their savings got depleted, Andy, all of a sudden their budgets are getting squeezed. So if you ask a lot of people, are you better off now versus a year and 2 years ago? You know, more and more people are like, no, I don't really think I am, because the cost of living went up in a lot of different categories by 25, 30, 35%, even though wages went up 18%. And that, I think, is what's weighing on consumers. And if I'm right, will weigh on them even more so over the next 6 to 12 months if the economy really slows down.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it in a very understandable way when you do dollars and cents and what the net is in the end.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that for a lot of people, the cost of living has run ahead of their gains in wages. And I think that's why, you know, the polls show that an awful lot of people aren't really happy with President Biden's performance, even though the unemployment rate is down. Inflation is going from 9% to 3%. But for a lot of families, the cost of living has exceeded the increase in their wages, and it's putting a real squeeze on them. And so how do they feel about it? I'm struggling. you know. And I think a lot of economists, when I listen, Andy, I hear them say, well, you know, inflation's come down, so wages are up 4.3%, and the CPI is only up 3.2%. So now real wages are positive, and that's going to really help stretch those paychecks. Well, is it good that inflation is down from 9 to 3%? Of course it is. But that viewpoint ignores the bigger picture, and that isn't as rosy.
You can tell people all about stats, economic data, when they see it firsthand, when they're sitting around the dinner table, it really does hit home. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We will be back with Jim right after the break. We'll talk about how this all translates to financial markets. We'll be right back after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
Back with Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at macrotides.com out of San Diego. So as we were heading into the break, Jim, we were talking about the fundamentals and the setup here. Let's take a technical look at markets and how all these fundamentals and the things we just talked about translates to stocks and financial markets. So where are we technical? Kind of give us the setup there.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'll say, Andy, to the faithful listeners of your Gains podcast, if they would like to receive a recent publication that has charts and all kinds of good stuff, and it send me an email to jimwelshmacro@gmail.com. And I'm happy to send it out. And the reason being is when we talk technicals, you know, it's always helpful to have a picture, you know, because I'm going to use a bunch of numbers. So if somebody wants to see what those pictures look like with some analysis, send me an email and I'll be happy to send a recent publication out so you can kind of tie all this together.
Grab a pen, take these numbers, take these numbers down, take these levels down. It's easier once you get them on paper as well. So go ahead, Jim.
It does help. Okay, so in terms of the S&P, we're really at a crossroads, Andy. The market, you know, rallied up into early August, my expectation, and I think we talked late July or so. Anyway, my expectation in late July, early August, was that we were on the cusp of a 5 to 7% pullback. As it turned out, the S&P dropped, I think, about 6%. Since the low a couple of weeks ago, it's rebounded. But so far, there's only three waves up. In other words, it rallied, it pulled back a little bit, rallied again, and then towards the end of last week, we started to head down. So from my perspective, if the S&P can rally and get above the recent high at 4607, that would be pretty bullish longer term. And it would imply that we're going to see a bigger rally after another pullback. Conversely, if the market rolls over and the S&P trades below 44.58, which was the high back in late August, then that will kind of seal the deal that we only have three waves up. And it would suggest that we're going to see the S&P continue to decline under 43.35. So right now, hey, I can, you know, point to things that suggest a positive outcome or negative outcome. And from my perspective, this is one of those times where, from a trading standpoint, it makes sense to kind of stay flat and wait for the market to show, tip its hand, so to speak, in terms of what is going to be the next bigger move. Longer term, I think the economy is going to have a significant slowing, if not recession, in the first part of next year. And when that happens, I think the S&P is going to have a fairly significant decline because earnings are going to get marked down, plus the P.E. ratio, which is currently at about 19 times forward earnings. That's pretty excessive. So I think there's a decent size decline coming if we go out, 3 to 6 months from now. Near term, the numbers I gave is the roadmap that I've been providing subscribers.
So how do you play this? What's your advice for the individual investor, the gains listener who is listening right now? We've talked about some of the fundamentals, the setup. We've talked about where the market could potentially be heading. How do you play this? How do you profit from it, Jim?
Yep. Okay. So, the majority of investors should have a diversified portfolio. And when this kind of conversation is directed toward, do you have a 10% or 20% allocation that you use tactical analysis to bob and weave a little bit with the market? We're nearing an inflection point, Andy. So to me, one has to be flexible because I don't know 100% that we are definitely going to see a recession. I think the odds are really pretty high. And the timing of when the economy shows meaningful slowing is going to dictate how much upside. So if you think about it, right now, a little bit of slowing, Wall Street considers as being bullish because that means the Fed will be done in terms of raising rates. And a little bit of slowing still means the economy avoids a recession and earnings are going to go up. The tipping point will come is when we see a little bit of slowing turn into a little bit more than just a little slowdown, but more actual weakening. And so the timing of that, to me, it's coming. I just don't know if it's like 2 months from now or 5 months from now. So from a tactical standpoint, for those who trade some portion of their portfolio, I would wait to see what the S&P does. Does it get below 44.58? Then it's going lower. If it gets above the most recent high, and I think I said earlier 46.07, that was a bad number. The actual is the high from last week at 45.41. So that's the best I can offer you, Andy, at this stage of the game for those who like to trade, especially S&P type of products. Based on my recession outlook, I think sectors like healthcare make a lot of sense. They do well when the economy slows and or goes into a recession. They have less volatility than the S&P 500. So institutional investors gravitate towards things like healthcare.
Okay, so you talked about healthcare, but meanwhile, there's a lot of time, and do you go international? Yeah. Where can you find at least some kind of return? You're thinking. Besides just healthcare, and I know trading it a little bit, but what other kind of plays can we look at here?
Okay, so I've been looking for the dollar to rally over the last couple months. It's rallied from under 100. To over 104. And while that was happening, I thought gold would correct. It got up to 2059, and I thought gold would correct while the dollar was strengthening. So far, it has. I think gold is going to drop below 1885, could trade as low as 1830, but I would be a buyer, at least establish a quarter to one-third of a position if gold drops below 1850. My take is, Andy, that gold is on its way to a new all-time high. From the lows of last September, it had a five-wave rally, which technically is a bullish structure. That's why I thought into May. Then we were set up for a pullback. I think this pullback is a wave two, and it's going to be followed by a rally above 2,100, maybe getting up to 2,400 in gold. So on gold, I would look to buy weakness. I think Treasury yields are potentially nearing a high. I would look to buy TLT, which is the longer term, I think the average maturity is about 27-year treasury bond, below 92.23. If I'm right about the economy slowing materially, I think between now and next spring, we're going to see treasury yields come down and TLT would then rally. And I think potentially TLT closed today at 93.52. I think it could potentially rally up to the 108, 109 area as we get into next spring. So what I'm waiting for is...
And just real quick, when you say TLT, you're talking about the iShares 20-plus year Treasury bond ETF. Explain how that works real quick in your play.
Well, again, if you think of a teeter-totter, and on one side is yields and on the other side is prices. So, you know, if one side goes up, the other side goes down. So what's been happening is yields have been going up on the right-hand side of that teeter-totter. And as a result, the left-hand side prices have been going down. If I'm right, TLT will rally because they own treasury bonds. And at some point in time, if the economy slows, as I expect, we'll see treasury yields come down. So the right side of the teeter-totter, which has been going up, will start to come down. The left side of the teeter-totter, which has been going down, then will go up. So it's a way to, you know, earn some income while you're waiting for all this to transpire. But that's why I like that position. But I think it will drop below the most recent low, which was 90. I'm going to look it up real quick so I can give you an absolute to the penny number, Andy. 92.23. So that's where I would say be a buyer of TLT under 92.23.
Okay, traded about $93.50 today.
Yeah.
And then GLD, that's what I use for gold exposure. You may use another one as well. Yep. In the gold front, how are you playing it? What level?
I use IAU, which is it's almost identical to GLD. The difference is that GLD is $178 and change per share, and IAU is $36 and change per share. So it's a little bit easier to trade IAU just because you can buy more shares. You commit the same amount of money, but you have more shares, which sometimes makes scaling in and out of a position a little bit easier. So again, I look at cash gold, not the futures gold, and below 1850, I would be then making at least a one-third position in either IAU or GLD.
Okay, on the stocks front, I think we've talked EEM, which is iShares MSCI Emerging Markets ETF. You've expressed interest in that, if I'm not mistaken, in the past, as you're getting exposure to the emerging markets. Where do you see emerging markets, international stocks, specific areas there?
Well, I turned negative on EEM when I was looking, you know, for the dollar to rally. Historically, EEM doesn't do well as the dollar goes up in value. And what we've seen is EEM has declined from 41.50 down to about 39 and change. No big deal. But at the same time, obviously, it's gone down. They're under $38. I would put a toe in the water.
If gold is moving higher, you know, how does that dollar, gold, and emerging markets all kind of gel out?
Well, they are kind of inversely correlated. So as the dollar goes up, historically, not always, but historically, it will put downward pressure on gold in emerging markets. Now, that doesn't mean they necessarily go down, although I would say most of the time that is true. Sometimes it just mutes the rate of improvement and gain in those other two. So in an ideal situation, I like to see the dollar in a position where it's going to pull back. If I'm right, I think the dollar is nearing a high, Andy, over the next week. My expectation has been that it would rally up to about 105.50 to 106. We may get there sometime this week. Then I think the dollar is going to have a pullback of 2 or 3%. And that could open the window for short-term rallies in both emerging markets and gold. But more specific on the gold, I'm looking for a decline under 1850 because I think that will provide a longer-term, low-risk entry point in the anticipation that gold is going to rally above 2100 and maybe approach, as I said earlier, 23 to 2400 over the next 6 months.
And then as far as on the equities front, anything that you find interesting in stocks, say more domestically?
Yeah. Again, as I said, defensively, I think healthcare is a good I think I want to see the short-term pattern play itself out in the S&P. If the S&P rallies above that 45-41, so I can look at the chart and say, okay, we now have five up from the low at 43-35 that we saw a couple weeks ago. Okay, there'll be a pullback, but that pullback should be bought because subsequently I think the S&P will rally back up to the prior all-time high above 4,800. So this, you know, I want to see a five-wave rally off the low that we saw a couple weeks ago because that will increase the probabilities that that low was significant and the trend is up to a new all-time high. Conversely, if the S&P drops below 44.58, then I think potentially a drop down to 4250 to 4300 would follow. And I would probably recommend, you know, obviously we can talk if it gets there, but that to me would probably set up the other buying opportunity. So right now I'm just waiting for the pattern of the S&P to kind of clarify. I thought when we got down to 4335, I expected the S&P to rally. And it has. It actually rallied more than I thought. I didn't think it was going up to 4,500. So I think for a lot of investors, it's very difficult to be tactical. I think the majority of investors are buy and hold. I think your listeners are probably more tactical than the average investor. But there are times when I have to let the market tell me what the pattern is. I mean, as I said earlier, we're at a crossroads. I know the parameters as I've described them in terms of, okay, if this happens, you want to be a buyer here. If that happens, you want to be a buyer at a different price point. And right now, that's the best I can offer.
All right. And as we wrap up today's conversation, we are in a lot of a wait and see pattern here, and we've covered a lot of ground. Final takeaway, Jim.
Again, I think investors aren't fully comprehending where the Fed is coming from. The Fed is going to want to see more weakness than I think most investors realize. And the probability of there being a recession, I think, is much higher than what most people expect. And that will have and play a big role in terms of how the stock market trades in the first half of next year.
Big thanks to Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. And as always, be sure to subscribe, follow, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.